Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Hello, I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and this is the sixth season of The Game, so I'm looking forward to getting a statue in my honor sometime in the next 119 years. And by the way, before somebody calls me self-absorbed like somebody did on Twitter the other week, Chris, the producer, writes the script for me. Don't blame him. This week, I'm joined by Matt Holland, George Culkin, and Patrick Barkley. Later on, we'll be discussing what on earth is going on with English sides in Europe. But first, let's head to the Britannia. Right, plenty of love for Tottenham on this podcast, because it's the second straight week, of course, that we talk about them. But away to Stoke, things didn't exactly go to plan. That incredible run, I think was it 10 of 11, comes to an end. Paddy, Stoke, deserving?
Yeah, well, no, I think... I
picking on Stoke already.
Yeah. No, I think it was 2-2. Sorry, I beg your pardon. I think it was a draw. I think 2-2 would have been a fair result because of the balance of refereeing decisions. But tremendous game. A tremendous second half, should I say. But Spurs lost it, clearly, in the first half. A little bit lackadaisical in defence when there was a Ledley king-sized hole in that defence. Gallas is not in the same class. I think they paid for that.
Can you say no longer in the same class, please? Gallas is one of my all-time favourite players.
Actually, I would like to qualify that. I would say that Gallas is no longer in the same class as Ledley King, quite well corrected. An absolutely great game of football. I'm trying to avoid the phrase contrast in styles.
Yeah, contrast in halves as well. I mean, certainly, you know, first half I thought Stoke were the better side and Spurs were in the second half. It's such a shame that when you have such a fantastic game, end-to-end, chances galore, plenty of talking points, that actually the one thing that we are talking about the next day is the referee and some of the decisions that the officials made as well.
Yeah,
the linesman, I think that was the worst of all. Absolutely. I mean, Adebayor was quite clearly 2 yards onside.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I think the handball on the line is a difficult one. It happens so quickly. Shot's hit with power. It's a difficult one to spot. I think the Kabul sending off was unfortunate, and I didn't think it was a red card. I think the second yellow I thought was a soft one. But the offside goal for Adebayor to have that ruled out should never happen. I mean, he's quite clearly 2 yards onside.
I thought the other decisions were arguments for video assistance. I mean, it was interesting, the fourth official, Mariner, actually prompted a booking. So he was, you know, the principle that fourth officials should take part in the game is accepted. So why can't they have a video? And if that had been the case, you know, enough of those decisions would have been very quickly rectified, in particular the offside one, for a more fair outcome. And it is, as you rightly say, it is an absolute shame that we're talking about decisions got wrong, which needn't be got wrong, you know?
George... I'm struck by something, and we see this happen when teams just simply don't show up for the first half. I mean, I want to give credit to Stoke because obviously they, I thought they were set up well. They played their game, but Tottenham was just absent in the first 45 minutes, I thought. Why do you think that happens? I mean, in general.
Yeah, well, great question. I mean, I guess that's one of the sort of secrets of management and all that sort of stuff. Sometimes you just look at your players. It only takes one, two, or three to be a couple of percent off, and it can sort of infiltrate the whole team. So, but you know, I would like to say something positive about Stoke as well, because I know we're going to come on to talk about how sort of English teams are doing in Europe, but you know, for them to be juggling the Europa League and to be eighth in the Premier League as well at the same time is a pretty good achievement. And you have to say that, you know, for all that sort of old debate about style and stuff does alienate people or gets people's back up, Pulis has got a really good team there and a really good squad.
Well, speaking of the squad, Matt, I'm struck by the fact that, you know, he basically plays four center halves. You know, Mark Wilson is obviously good on the ball, but he's not a sprightly left back who's going to surge up the wing. So it's something that is very functional to his system. I mean, leaving aside, obviously, they're all sort of good size, but it's not something that you often see somebody going out there. But I guess when you break it down, if you leave the crossing to your wingers, why not? Why do you need sort of a little busy fullback? Why can't you have another central defender there if he fills the space and he can pass the ball and he can defend?
I mean, defending it certainly at fullback has become not non-existent. You know, fullbacks nowadays, the emphasis is on them to try and get forward and try and support their wingers and try and get around them. Sometimes that leaves a little bit of a hole at the back. I think the teams that have dealt with that best are the ones that have had two holding midfield players. So, for instance, Man City, the way they play, where Mika Richards is quite often is the furthest forward on the right-hand side, Kolarov stroke Clichy on the left-hand side, but they've got two holding midfield players who can fill in at any time. So I think they can cope with it. But sometimes I think... Chelsea, I think, go to Chelsea, Bissinga and Ashley Cole pushing on. I think Chelsea have found problems at the back with Luiz and John Terry because of that. You know, Luiz sometimes gets dragged out of position as well, and there's big gaps at the back, which has caused them a problem. With Stoke, that's not Tony Pulis's way. He wants his team to defend. That's what he wants from his fullback. So if it means having a bigger back line, four centre halves, that's the way it is. Again,
it enables him to play with two wingers, doesn't it?
Well, it enables him to play with two wingers. He also plays with two holding midfield players as well and doesn't really get them to go in the box. It's quite a pragmatic style, of course, but you know, he's got strength in the air then from set pieces,
Whelan,
which is something
a bit harsh on Whelan. I mean, Whelan can play a little bit.
I'm saying he's a defensive midfield player. I'm not saying he can't play. I'm saying he's a defensive midfield player.
He doesn't get forward much, but I mean,
he can pass a great deal. Yeah, no, he can pass. I'm not disputing that at all, but it's the style of play that Stoke play is four centre halves, two holding midfield players, and the attacking is left to the two wingers in the main and the two forwards, Crouch and Walters, and relying on set pieces and long throws when you can put one of either your fullbacks or your centre halves forward and cause problems in the box. That's the way they set up. It's the same with Ireland, the national team. You know, it might not be pretty to watch at times, but it's an effective style of play. Mm-hmm. Now, I think, you know, it takes all sorts. I'm not one of those that says it's an awful way to play. I don't like it. And no, it takes all sorts. And if it's successful for Tony Pulis and his team, fair play to them.
Mm. Paddy, fair play to him?
Yes, absolutely. It was a great set. I couldn't take my eyes off that second half. I thought it was sensational. And okay, one team plays the way I would like, you know, I like to see. And the other one I wouldn't like to see if everybody played like Stoke. But the contrast is great, isn't it? What makes the game.
Absolutely. We can't all be the same. You know, as individual players, you can't all be the same.
And I have to say that Stoke's performance against Bolton at Wembley last season was one of the most exciting displays of football I saw all season.
George, back to Spurs. They, at some point, basically last week, they were in a situation where if they won their game in hand, they'd be second in the table. Now this defeat... Is this a trend? I mean, can you really see Spurs finishing second or even challenging for the title, or are they going to go back to sort of what many think is their sort of natural position, sort of battling for fourth place?
I think they've got a fantastic. I think they've got a fantastic chance to sort of get back up there. You know, I think there's been a levelling off of what you would describe as the top three or top four. So I do think there's an opportunity there, and Spurs have played some wonderful stuff this football and have been really good. And by the way, you know, they're not the first of the big teams to come unstuck at Stoke either this season, or not to win at Stoke. So it's not the end of things for them. They've been an absolutely fantastic run, and of course the challenge for them is to start that again against Sunderland on Sunday.
George, I saw a stat last week that listed sort of the, I think it was over the past 5 years, the top eight clubs in terms of net spend. And the reason it was a top eight is that Manchester United were in eighth place, which I think, you know, might have surprised a few people. Obviously, you know, prices for guessing who number one was. But what was interesting was, I think Stoke were sixth or seventh, alongside Sunderland and Villa. Given the spend, I mean, we've seen that they're good at finishing, and that they can finish in mid-table. Should they be entitled to? Should the expectations towards Tony Pulis be higher now that he's been there? He's had the stability, he's had the money to bring in a lot of the players that he wanted. Should we be talking top six? Or is there too much of a gap between Stoke and Liverpool?
I think there is a huge gap there. I think where they are at the moment, juggling that with the Europa League is a brilliant achievement. I mean, I think they, as a club, they have progressed mightily. It has taken a lot of money, and you have to take your hat off to the owners for backing Pulis in the way that they have done. But you know, making that leap is one that's caught many teams out. I think I'm quite surprised that they are where they are on the table with those European commitments as well. And I think top 10 and you know, a run in one of those cups is what they should be looking for, and what they will
Absolutely.
Be looking for.
I would say that they've got to probably where they should be. And I would certainly say yes. I mean, obviously, if you find yourself, try and win every football match. It's as simple as that. And if you find yourself in the top four, that would be fantastic. If you don't worry about it. I mean, this is, you know, and if you found a 100-year-old supporter who'd followed Stoke all his life, he'd say this is absolutely brilliant. We've got a good stadium that's full every week. We've got the best atmosphere in the country, man for man. Sorry, person for person. We've got, you know, a terrific side packed with exciting players. Maybe not, you know. Okay, they're not Lionel Messi, but they're exciting players in their own way. You know, I don't think there's a single problem at Stoke. I think they're doing exactly what they should be doing. They've got good community involvement, which is why the crowd are so enthusiastic. I think they're a template for how a club should be run.
I just want to wrap it up with a question to Matt about this. Matt, a few years ago, you were in a comparable position, perhaps in some ways, to Stoke when you were at Ipswich, and you got into you had that run in the UEFA Cup under Uncle George, and you maybe didn't have the biggest squad back then, maybe not even as big a squad as Stoke do. Now, I know you're kind of a freak who basically played every single game always, so you probably weren't affected by fatigue ever, but is it something that you felt and you felt hurt you in the league that year?
I think there was a... it's always difficult.
Now, are you really bionic?
Yeah. It's always difficult when people ask that question, what went wrong in the second season? You know, it's difficult to put a finger on it. I think there were a number of contributing issues. I think, obviously, second season syndrome, if you like, teams get to know how you play, your style, and teams adapt to come up against you. I think the UEFA Cup perhaps took a little bit of an eye off the Premier League for us, mm-hmm. and we started to perhaps focus more on the UEFA Cup than the league, which was a mistake. You're playing Thursday, Sunday all the time, the travelling, because it's not just playing Thursday, Sunday, it's the travelling as well. You know, when you're away in Europe, and you've got a 5-hour plane journey, and then you have to come back and then play again on the Thursday, on the Sunday, and you're traveling again on the Saturday. So you fly back on the Friday, you're traveling again on the Saturday, you're playing on the Sunday, you're traveling back on the Monday. You know, all these different things don't help. So I think that was a contributing factor. Tiredness probably does play a bit of an issue,
but not for you, but for your lesser human teammates, right?
No, I think for myself as well. I mean,
you play every minute of every game that season?
I think I played for, I didn't miss a league game for about six seasons, I think. Something like that.
Yeah. And you played in a position where you never had to tackle and never got poked either, right?
A lot of people tell you I didn't make a tackle, but...
apart from Lampard, there can't be many players who've done that.
I think for consecutive outfield appearances, at one stage I was a third or fourth on the list or something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on to the Stadium of Light, where there was a tremendous anticipation for Martin O'Neill's first game in charge. It was just crazy. I watched this, and you hear the reception he got coming out pitch side and so on. But I want to start with you, George, for obvious reasons. You saw the reception. Was there a moment in the game before those two goals in the last 10 minutes where maybe you thought, ooh, you know, I wonder how he will react to the defeat and what he'll work on?
Yes, I mean, you have to say that for 84 minutes that game was pretty much in keeping with everything that had happened earlier this season. Sunderland play well for 15-20 minutes, don't take chances, slip a bit, and allow the opposition to come back on it, and then you can sort of see the confidence. You can see the confidence dip. I suppose the one big difference is that if Steve Bruce had still been manager, I think a lot of people would have left the stadium. You know, there would maybe be a bit more dissent going on, and that didn't happen. He made a great substitution, and that changed the course of the game. James McLean, who'd not been seen so far this season, came onto the left, made Sunderland far more direct, far more dangerous, gave everybody a lift, and sort of things took off from there. I mean, you have to remember that before Sunday, Sunderland have only won three home games in 2011. So it was a very important moment for O'Neill, but a very important moment for the club, and just great that those people could leave the stadium feeling a little bit of uplift, because it's felt like a very, very long year for a lot of them.
90 minutes in, if you had to guess and speculate, which Sunderland regulars under Bruce will we be seeing less of between now and January?
Ooh, that's a great question. I mean, I don't think there's much choice, really. In terms of people that you might have expected to come in,
El Mohammadi.
Well, he was on the bench yesterday. I don't think he would have been starting all the time under Steve Bruce. Either Craig Gardner would have had a great chance of coming in under O'Neill. He's been homesick. That's one of the reasons, or unsettled. That's one of the reasons he's not been playing. I think there's a chance he would have started, but he was injured in training. I don't think there's really scope for much. You wouldn't say there's sort of anybody completely out in the cold under Steve Bruce has got a chance of coming back in, I suppose, apart from Matt Kilgallen, the defender, who hasn't figured at all and was on the bench suddenly yesterday. But I think O'Neill's already said he's going to have to use the squad that he's got. I don't think Lee Cattermole, obviously, was suspended, and I think a lot of Sunderland supporters would say him being out of the team is not necessarily a bad thing. Will he stay as captain? I think that's one interesting subject for the days and weeks ahead. He was sort of a totemic figure under Steve Bruce, got sent off lots of times, has almost become kind of a parody. You would be waiting for that first booking, and he I think he really is at a crossroads in his career to try and get back to where he was a couple of years ago. It looks like the game has moved on without him. Will he figure as much under Martin O'Neill? I guess he would be the obvious one to answer that question.
Paddy,
Martin O'Neill is in a situation where obviously the imperative will be, you know, he's taken over a team that's near the on the edge of the relegation zone. If you were Ellis Short, would you tell him, hey Martin, last season we could have finished right around mid-table. I expect you to go, and you're a better manager than Steve Bruce. You're more intelligent. You speak in complete sentences. You jump higher than he does when we score a goal. I expect you to take this group of players and work with them and do a better job than Steve Bruce did. And we finish higher up the table. And then we'll talk about money. It's not going to happen, though, is it?
No.
Because that's not how football works.
If I were Ellis Short, I'd keep my trap shut. I'd leave everything to Martin O'Neill. I wouldn't give him any advice whatsoever, because
would you give him large quantities of money to spend in January?
Yes, if I had them,
he's a billionaire. Of course, he has the money. The question is, how much longer does he want to chuck money at this club? Right?
Yeah, I understand that Ellis Short doesn't want to keep chucking money into a bottomless pit. I mean, bear in mind that although Sunderland get big crowds, they've got a terrific stadium, that it's not an area of unlimited prosperity where there's, you know, infinite scope for there's infinite potential. It may well be that Sunderland have reached their potential and just needed a new manager. No, I wouldn't give him any advice at all. I would just sit back.
I'm not talking advice, not expectations. What would you expect from Martin O'Neill?
The immediate expectation of Martin O'Neill is mid-table, but by which I mean if they finish the season 12th, that's fine. I mean, Saturday was an unusual game. If Steve Bruce had still... I hate to say this because I don't like to see changes of management unless there's a really persuasive reason. And I think that in this case there was, because Martin O'Neill in Sunderland has chemistry, just as Newcastle and Keegan had chemistry.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
But the point is, if Steve Bruce had still been manager, they'd have definitely lost to Blackburn Rovers because the crowd would have got at them, and they wouldn't have kept going right to the end. But it's a question of seeing, is that going to remain the pattern throughout the season? If it is, they can finish mid-table, and that's great. And I leave it up to Martin O'Neill. He knows what the thing you do after that is.
You're skirting the issue of money here.
Just one thing to interject. Yes. Ellis Short did write some programme notes yesterday, and he basically said that the aspiration for the club is to be regular and established members of the top 10. I mean, they finished 10th last season, just by the skin of their teeth on the last day of the season, and that is where they want to, you know, that is where they want to be.
Yeah, well, the other thing I would be looking for, you're not going to make progress by buying Manchester United's washed-up reserves, which is what Sunderland have been doing for too long, actually. I mean, not just the two that are in the team now, but the centre half. I mean,
Wes Brown?
No. What's his name? McShane. You know, all that kind of, you know,
taking a few years ago. Wasn't that
a
Roy Keane signing, McShane?
But they've been taking. You know, they've been solving Manchester United's problems instead of solving their own. What Sunderland need, I would say, George, Sunderland need to buy hungry players on the way up.
Sunderland need a striker. Yeah. That's what Sunderland need someone to put the ball in the net. I mean, Darren Bent went. Gian went before the start of the season, you know, or at the beginning of the season. So those two are a massive loss. Now, Connor Wickham, I know him from my Ipswich days. He's not a natural goal scorer. He's not someone who, you know,
he played on the wing a lot, didn't he?
Yeah, he's not someone I'm going to say he's going to get 20, 25 goals a season. He, you know, he's a good target man. He can strike a ball with both feet. He will score goals, but he's not that archetypal fox in the box who's going to get you 20 goals a season, 25 plus a season. Sessegnon, same. He's not, I don't think, someone who's going to get you 20, 25. No. Bentner, he's brought Bentner in on loan. Now, I don't think necessarily Nicholas Bentner. No, I'm not sure Nicholas Bentner's the man that's going to get you 20. So that is an area that's something he's strengthened. I think the actual squad and the players that they've got there are of a decent standard, and I think it is a reasonably good squad.
Okay, that's enough Sunderland now for the rest of the year between last week and this week. But I have to say something about Blackburn. I think these guys are really, really unlucky. Leaving aside the freakdom of Steve Keane, have they been unlucky?
Yes, in certain games they've been unlucky. I don't think against Sunderland they were unlucky. I think they had one shot on target throughout the whole game, and they sat deep and deeper and deeper and invited pressure. Mm. So I don't think they're unlucky against Sunderland. I think in Samba and Dan, they've got a decent centre-half partnership. I think they've got a good goalkeeper in Paul Robinson. He's experienced and he made a couple of good saves yesterday. But there's areas that...
fought with the winners?
They were unlucky. They were unlucky yesterday in the sense that, you know, they'd lost three players to injury after 56 minutes, and then, you know, they ended up with 10 players on the pitch at the end through injury. I mean, not that that would have changed anything, but, you know, certainly it kind of felt like things went against them in that sense. They had a second goal ruled out, which for a foul on Kieran Westwood, which Steve Keane was unhappy with. You know, if that had gone in, then, you know, things may have turned. I mean, I know what you mean about unlucky in the second half. I mean, they did sit so deep, and Samba. And Dan were outstanding in terms of heading the ball out repeatedly, but a goal was going to come at some stage because they were sitting so far back.
Well, obviously a rough season for Blackburn and their fans, and rough season for Steve Keane. Not the greatest of weeks for English sides in the Champions League. A lot of sort of facile jokes about, you know, Manchester going from being the capital of world football to City and United meeting in the Europa League final in Bucharest, another glamorous place. But is there a larger theme here with City and United going out? Because people love to see big trends. And I'll give you an example. Like, some people come out and say, like, oh, look, but English sides have dominated the Champions League because 7 of the last 14 finalists were from the Premier League. Mm. That may be true, but just... flip side of that is just 1 of the last 8 semi-finalists was from the Premier League. Flip side of that, only 3 English clubs in, I think it's the last 4 years, have failed to qualify for the round of 16 before this season. So put all those things together. Is there a larger trend here, or is this just happenstance and, you know, City being drawn into a tough group and United being really rubbish?
Yeah, I would go for the second. I think that the overall trend will show that usually an English team will qualify. I think this will be seen as a sort of a particularly poor year from that point of view. It's extraordinary that the two better sides have gone out and Arsenal and Chelsea have gone through, but that's football, as they say. But the plain fact is that an English team's not going to win it this year. I'd bet my house on that. So, you know, the point is everyone is chasing Real Madrid and Barcelona. And I think in terms of the overall strength, this is just a pretty funny year. But it certainly made the Europa League a bit more sexy from our point of view.
George, I'm assuming you've got no interest in moving down to leafy West London, so you don't want to bet Paddy's house. But do you buy that the no English side, that Chelsea and Arsenal are just shut out of the Champions League at this point, and I'm assuming where Paddy's going to go with it, it's going to be a private affair between Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Bayern Munich.
Well, it looks. I mean, it looks that way. I mean, it does. It does look that way. You know, I think sort of generally speaking, I think the top clubs in the Premier League, Man City aside, have been weaker over the last couple of seasons. I mean. So in that sense, I'm not surprised to see two clubs go out. I'm surprised that it was those two. Although, you know, Man City's first experience of the competition as a team, as a club, I think they've sort of done pretty well, really. You know, are those 99% of statistics are misleading. I mean, you know, it's very difficult to tell. I'm sort of quite glad in some ways. I mean, no offense to the teams that have gone out, but it's dull. I'm a bit bored of seeing them playing each other in the later stages of the competition. And you know, we should be, as football fans, I would like to think, you know, we should celebrate the fact that teams that aren't there regularly, you know, are now back in there. That's better for the competition. I know the competition is built to make the big clubs survive and stay in as long as possible, but if we want vibrant football, if we want vibrant European Cup, Champions League, it's great that those are the teams that are getting through.
Yeah, just on a broader point, George, to pick up on that, I mean, Michel Platini said that he wanted a more egalitarian Champions League, and now we've got 9 countries still in the in the knockout stages of the Champions League. And I think that's terrific for football as a whole. It sort of put a halt to the trend where we wondered, would we ever see the Dinamo Tbilisi, the great sides from the East. It looks now that there's more chance for people generally, even from Cyprus, you know, which I think is terrific. But I mean, Platini said he wanted that. He's got it. And I think from the point of view of football as a whole, it's much better.
I think assessing the two Manchester clubs in or failure to qualify, I think you know, City perhaps have been a little bit unlucky. I think they were drawn in a very difficult group. I think they got off to a slow start, losing and drawing the first two matches. They had the Tevez problem at Bayern Munich. I think they've responded to that, and the game against Bayern Munich, I know it was their second string, if you like, but they got strong. And I think every team across Europe who are still left in the competition would be delighted that City are out, because they were, for me, a real threat to win it.
Yep.
United have failed to deliver, and I think in the last game in particular, when you look at the team he put out in midfield, he plays a 3-man midfield with 2 wingers and a centre-half or a defender in Phil Jones. That was his midfield 3, so that shows an area of weakness at United.
Or an area of complacency?
I think there was perhaps an area of complacency in that group when they saw it, and everyone, myself included, thought it was a buy-through to the knockout stages, and perhaps United thought the same. The last time they failed to qualify for the group stages was, I think, 2005 and 06, when in January they bought Evra and Vidic, who have been the backbone of their back four since then. They went on to win, I think, the Carling Cup that year, and then won the league 3 times in succession and won the Champions League. So for it to be a trend that's going to continue, I still think that United will come back strong. Sir Alex Ferguson said he's not going to spend. I think he might.
It's very interesting. We always assume that Ferguson doesn't spend in January.
And he brought Evra and Vidic in that year when they got knocked out of the Champions League last time. So
you look at the entire spine of that. You know, and I know there's always lots of talk about spines of teams and all that, but you know, whether it's Van der Sar going retiring, you look at the two centre halves who've been kind of the rock of that back four, back five of the last few years. They're no longer clear of injury or fit at all times. Skulls from midfield. There's so much experience in that team that's been disbanded now. There's transition everywhere on the pitch. I think they've done pretty well in domestic football, but I think there are a lot of questions there, and it's another Man United squad in transition at the moment.
Well, Paddy, then on the back of that, and I'll give you the last word here, but if we look at English side, the Premier League, the top of the Premier League as a whole, right? I think we all agree City are better this year than last year.
Yes.
We would probably agree that Spurs are better this year than last year.
Yes.
But if United are in transition and they're not better than last season, even though they do have more points in the Premier League, I think most people would agree that, you know, the table doesn't lie when it comes to Chelsea and Arsenal, that they're transitioning. They're worse than last season. Yeah. are Liverpool better simply because Kenny isn't Roy? A lot of people might say that they've added Suarez and whatnot, so maybe Liverpool's slightly better. But overall, I kind of get a sense that at the top, there's sort of a bit of a backward slide here.
Yeah, I think that's
And also, and as far as Spurs being better, Harry, you know, 99% won't be the manager next year because he'll take the England job, of course.
Yes.
So, I mean, is the future, am I a bit concerned about the future?
Yeah, at the moment things are lovely because because 2, 3 and 4 are not so good as they were. I mean, 1 is better than it has been. Our best team is better than it has been since the Mourinho days at Chelsea, I think. But our 2, 3 and 4 have gone back. The good news is that 5 and 6 are really good now, which has not been the case. It's been the problem with our football.
Are you calling Spurs 5 or 6?
Well, no, I'm saying the traditional 5. I'm saying last season's 5 and 6 are now 2 and 3 standard because Liverpool are a really, really good side. And that's because of not only the Dalglish factor, but the Suarez and Adam factor. It's those two together that have made a huge difference. So that's good, but the trouble is that Spurs are brittle. Not only will they lose their manager, but two predators are after Modric, and their wage structure won't satisfy him. So that's a worry because he's the mainspring of the team. My God, we wouldn't be talking about Manchester United having midfield problems if Modric was there, would we? And he, you know, as Matty says, that Ferguson isn't, despite what we say, frightened to spend in January. So I think he could be knocking on the door at White Hart Lane. And Adebayor, who's been another key factor this season, is only on loan.
Just bringing it back to the European, where we started it, and our, you know, English side's weaker perhaps than in previous years in Europe. Well, you know, you look at in terms of winning it, and Real Madrid and Barcelona, you have to say, are the two teams that have caught the eye so far in the tournament. And, after watching the Clásico, Barcelona are still the team to beat. That's where United were aspiring to be at the end of last season when they got beat to them in the Champions League final. The aim for them was to get closer to Barcelona. They're further away now than they were then. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the league as a whole and whether it's weaker or stronger, certainly the Spanish league, they've got the three shortlisted players for the Ballon d'Or. Xavi, Messi, Ronaldo. They've probably got, if you added it to make it number four, you've got Iniesta as well to add that as well. Yeah. That, you have to say, is a stronger league. Not in depth, because the top two are stronger. The rest of the league isn't.
You think?
Yeah, I think. Well, you saw Chelsea dismantled Valencia, and you're telling me that Chelsea are a weaker side. So,
and they're the third, fourth
and
still.
They're still third in Spain. So in terms of depth, the Premier League is still very, very strong. In terms of the best teams around, Real Madrid and Barcelona, and you mentioned Bayern as well, because they beat City when they had a full-strength side. Those three, perhaps, are the teams to beat.
Time now for some quick hits. Manchester United hammer Wolves after falling to Basel in midweek. Paddy, what was different about United in this game?
Two factors. One, finishing. United's finishing. I mean, Wayne Rooney with an open goal blasts it in the misses kicks, and yet against Wolves he puts in two of the sweetest finishes you'll ever see in your life. And the second factor was that Basel, after wiping the floor with Manchester United in a drawn game at Old Trafford, weren't scared.
Speaking of Manchester United and, of course, Wayne Rooney, Rooney has successfully had his Euro 2012 ban reduced from 3 games to 2. George, are you okay with that, or are you scandalised, as some people have been?
I'm a little bit scandalised. The FA played by the rules as set out by UEFA, so fair enough, but I'm certainly not comfortable with the idea of an offence which in the domestic game would have been violent conduct being reduced, and I can understand why many club managers would be unhappy with that situation.
QPR gave Liverpool a fight before capitulating 1-0, but Matt, with Lucas injured and Jay Spearing suspended, how did young Jordan Henderson get on in the Matt Holland role?
Can we clarify what the Matt Holland role is?
It's a guy who sits in the middle. A guy who leads by example in the middle of the park.
It's the role also taken on by Roy Keane and certain infierior players.
Look, I think with Jordan Henderson, he's had a difficult start to life at Anfield. He's found it hard, and there's no question. I don't think he's come anywhere near to his best form. When you're asking about Liverpool and what Jordan Henderson brings to the team, now that you know he's not this player that's going to be the creative spark, and it's not what they bought him for, I don't think either. You know, they brought Downing in, they brought Charlie Adam for that very reason. Now Jordan Henderson, I think, is a box-to-box midfielder who makes tackle after tackle. Yes, he hasn't perhaps set the world alight at Anfield, but I think, you know, he's a young lad, he's learning the game, he will get better. You know, I think he's a decent player. This season hasn't been his best yet.
As part of their 125th anniversary extravaganza, Arsenal celebrate by beating Everton 1-0 with a wonder strike by Robin van Persie. They also celebrated by unveiling statues honoring Thierry Henry, Tony Adams, and Herbert Chapman. Paddy, give me the next three names you expect to be honoured with statues by the Arsenal.
Ah, right. Well, I'm a bit...
He's rubbing his hands
short on... Well, I'm trying to think of players under Chapman and probably... and struggling a bit. Dennis Bergkamp, certainly. A lot of people would think it anomalous that you have Thierry Henry and not Dennis Bergkamp, who is equal. George Graham, there is a complication there, but I think it should be overcome.
The fact that he took bugs and smeared the club.
Yes, but I think his contribution as a manager and his love for the club would overcome that, given the passage of time. And the other one would be Liam Brady.
Newcastle travel to Norwich and were beaten 4-2. That's what happens when your central defenders are both out and you have to play Perch and Danny Simpson at the heart of your defense. Anything Pardew could have done differently? Perhaps name himself as a defender? He was useful.
Yes. No, he could have switched the back four around a little bit, but Newcastle have simply run out of players, which is obviously a great shame, but they've got a decent squad, but it's a very, very small one. It did get me thinking, however, because I do remember not that long ago, we used to see players like Chris Sutton, Dion Dublin play at centre-half. Alan Shearer was arguably Newcastle's best defender when he played for them defending at corners.
You could have played one of the Amiobis at centre-half.
What about playing one of the Amiobis as centre-half?
Or both Amiobis.
Yeah.
There you go. Swansea are up to 11th in the table as they beat Fulham 2-0. Michel Vorm saves a penalty. Matt, is he getting your vote for goalkeeper of the year thus far? And if you say no, then you got to give me two guys who are better.
Well...
Two guys, not a goalkeeper.
I'm going to say yes, because he's...
two guys, not a goalkeeper.
I'm going to say yes.
Barry Barton is going to be here all week, ladies and gentlemen.
Boom, boom. Yeah, well done. I'm going to say yes, because he's got me more fantasy league points than I could have ever hoped for. When you consider about the goalkeepers this year, I think Brad Friedel's made a huge difference to Tottenham as well. I think he's been an excellent signing. So, but at the moment, yeah, he gets my vote.
Gab, one for you. Barcelona won 3-1 at the Bernabeu in that little old game we called the Clásico. Actually, in England, we call it the El Clásico, and people who say that should be shot. Anyway, never mind that. It was, I thought, a tremendous drama. What did you learn? What can you tell us about it?
Well, I think one obvious thing you learn is that, you know, rumors of Barcelona's demise are very premature. Real Madrid came into it having won 15 games in a row. Mourinho went for the jugular, the 4-2-3-1, the high-pressing game. And Barcelona, and it worked initially. Barcelona got a goal down, but then, boom, Guardiola makes a tactical adjustment. Puyol to right back, Dani Alves in midfield. They break the press, and they have 60% possession, and they score. And episodes might have said something different, but I think it's pretty clear that Barcelona are still a notch above, also because top to bottom I think they also have better players. Not a huge blow in terms of the Liga table, but psychologically I think it's something that Mourinho's team's going to have to recover from. That's all we've got time for this week, but you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, your analysis. You can also follow us on Twitter. Lots of ways to keep in touch with us, so please do. Till next week, bye bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.